Waterhouse, and I'm an alcoholic.
My sobriety date is June 22nd, 2014. I have a sponsor, he has a sponsor, who has a sponsor, and all that good stuff. I sponsor others. I'm still looking for sponsees. I'm open to sponsor others. I'm going to, little quick note, I just got back from deployment to Kuwait about 2 weeks ago. I have to go back in a couple weeks, in about a week. So the past 8 months that I was over there was a lot of time in with my big book and my higher power, and not as many meetings. So it's kind of nice to be back and be able to go to meetings whenever they're available, not just when they're available to me. All right, so I guess I'll jump right in into what happened, or what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I had my first drink when I was 14 years old. I was at my aunt's wedding. And they had two champagne bowls, two punch bowls. One was a champagne punch and one was a not champagne punch. And I pretended to not know which one was which and had several drinks of the other and got that nice little warm, fuzzy feeling. And it was having fun. And my cousins thought that was hilarious. And they're all in their 20s. So they decided that night it would be fun to get me completely trashed. Vodka and Coca-Cola is not a great starting point for drinking, by the way. But I had so much fun, I blacked out, don't remember much of what happened that night. The next day we went to the beach, I had a hangover for the first time in my life, the whole day at the beach. And if you haven't stood in the sun with a terrible hangover, try it, it's not that great. And so that next night we came back and I did it all over again. So my first and second drunk were back to back when I was 14 years old. And then from 15 and 16, it was just whenever I could get it. I was just going into high school, so when there were parties, I'd go to parties, and you have it whenever available. But by 16, 17, I was working at a place where everyone I worked with was an ex-con or an ex-felon, and it made it very easy to get anything, because they were all like, oh yeah, sure man, I'll pick that up for you, just throw me a couple bucks, and then that happened. So by 17, 18, I was a daily drinker. And continued then all the way up until I got sober. And I'm going to skip the gruesome bits in the middle because it was a lot of blackouts, a lot of fights, a lot of stupid stuff that happened. I was a delivery driver for about 4 years, and I would get off work at 7-8 o'clock at night, drive to Missouri because their liquor stores were open later because I grew up in Kansas, pick up alcohol, drive home, and get wasted. It was a race to see how much I could drink before I blacked out. And then I'd finish whatever was left during my blackout, because I didn't just pass out at the end, I would just keep going. But I would drink until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, wake up go to work at 8, and if you pound down a lot of alcohol, you're still drunk when you get up. So I would drive to work in and out of blackout. And the worst one that I can remember is we used to deliver to high schools. Like the school lunch meals. Like it was a Pizza Hut, so we'd take pizzas to school lunch. Yeah. Worst I remember is in and out of blackout the whole first hour or so that I was at work, and then I remember loading the pizzas in the car, and the next thing I remember is opening the door to the high school. So I drove with a full load of probably 90 pizzas in the car from the store to there and don't remember anything until I was opening the door with an armload of pizzas going, how did I get here? It's not as much fun, but it is as you'd think, but you know, the scary thing is when that becomes normal and it doesn't scare you anymore, when that's just another day. You just woke up and that's what you did today. I don't remember driving to work, but here I am. And you just do it day in and day out. Now, I'm just going to skip ahead a little bit. My last time out, because I joined the military at 17, I signed my papers, and went to basic and all that stuff, and I was a reservist for a while, so I could get away with a lot of stuff as a reservist. Didn't ever do much in the dry goods area, but I did enjoy a little bit of that left-handed cigarette. But anyway, moving on from that. My last time out, I was in North Carolina to do a backload on a boat because I work in the watercraft field for the Army boats. And the whole week, it had been just a couple beers a night with the other guys I was up there with. Just nothing crazy, just a little bit. And this last night out, we were flying out the next morning. We'd gotten the whole boat done in record time. We'd done a great job, and they were all happy with us. And so we decided we were going to go and have fun. And they were like, we're going to go to the gym. I'm like, I'm going to go home and take a nap, which I did not go home and take a nap. I decided I was going to pregame because I knew what I could drink and I knew what they could drink. And I was like, I'm going to need a lot more than they need. And so by the time they picked me up, I was already well in over my head. And I remember the first bar we went to and the other six after that, as I'm told, I don't remember any of it. I nearly got my NCO, another NCO, and a soldier that was under me arrested that night. Luckily, the one that was under me had stopped drinking earlier in the night so that he would be safe to drive, and they let us take him home. But I decided to pick a fight with an NCO that was 6'4", 270 pounds. And if you can see, that did not go very well for me. I just remember waking up and everything hurt and I had a giant black eye. And my sergeant wouldn't talk to me for about 3 days after that. And when he finally did and he relayed the story of what happened and still kind of shocks me to this day when I think about it. It's like, oh, I don't remember any of that. And I think that's what upset him the most is that I didn't remember what I had done. And that was an accountability thing for him. Like that I couldn't remember what stupid stuff I had done and the trouble I almost got him and everybody else into. But he gave me an option. He said, we can either take this up the chain and you'll probably get a dishonorable discharge, or you can go to treatment through the military program. And I did, and they put me in a locked ward for 28 days. I couldn't go anywhere. But I came out of that, and first day out, I went to a meeting. And I'm so glad because I had because that was the same day as Warp Tour. And it was a real toss-up between I'm going to go to this place where there's going to be a whole bunch of bands and alcohol and people drinking and doing other stuff, and it's my first day out of a treatment center, or I'm going to go to a meeting. And you can ask my wife. I love going to rock shows. I love to go and hang out, rock out, get in the pit, whatever I can do. I have so much fun with it. So it was that was a hard decision for me. But I believe I made the right one because I've been sober since that day. I went to a meeting and I met good people in AA that pointed me in the right direction. And I got a sponsor my second day out of treatment, mostly because he just kept nagging me. Because we went out to eat, you know, you go fellowship with others. So after the meeting, I went out with them. I wasn't going to, but I kind of got, you know, finagled into it. They're like, oh, we'll give you a ride back to your car. You don't have to pay for gas. You know, just hop in the car. I'm like, oh, fine, here we go. So I get in the car and I go out there, and this guy just keeps asking me, do you have a sponsor yet? Do you have a sponsor yet? I'm like, no, I'm looking for one. Do you have a sponsor yet? No, I'm looking for one. The next day, I wake up in the morning, I've got 3 missed calls and a text message, have you found a sponsor yet? From this guy. And I'm like, man, either he's really hurting or I really need to take this guy up. So I picked him up as my sponsor, and then the rest is history. I went through it. I went through the steps. You go through your first, and that one was easy because I knew I had a problem at this point. I mean, when your CEO is looking at you going, you're either going to get a dishonorable discharge or you're going to go get locked up for 28 days. So it's up to you. You kind of slaps you in the face at that point. And just a backflash here. I said I didn't get into other stuff, but that was really because of a extreme fear I had of getting kicked out of the military for getting popping hot on a drug test. Because I had lots of options to get in that, but I didn't. But I want to talk a little bit more about sobriety. Living in sobriety, if somebody tells you it's all rainbows and sunshine, they're pulling your chain. It is not. There's hard times, there are good times. I have a lot more to be grateful for than I have to be upset or angry about, and I try not to do that. I see that anger is something for me that leads me back to a drink, and I get into a perpetual cycle where I'm angry, so I go drink, and because I'm drinking, I'm angry, and so then I'm angry, so I go drink, and because I'm drinking, I'm angry, and it's just an endless cycle. So I learned that instead of getting angry at people, what I try and do nowadays is put myself in their shoes. Because something that AA taught me is, it didn't just teach me how to be sober, but it taught me how to be a good person, how to be a better person, and how to look out for those around me more than I look out for myself. I mean, you got to look out for yourself because you can't help somebody else if you can't help yourself. And you got to look to your higher power to help you because you can't help you because you tried that and it didn't work. But so now I put myself in somebody else's shoes and I go, why are they in this situation that they're in, and how can I be of service to them instead of getting dogged down in this, why am I about being angry at somebody? But like I said, there's also the hard times. In sobriety, I've been sober a little over 2.5 years, about 2.5 years, and I've lost 3 family members in that period of time. First one, I wasn't even a year sober. Second one, I was just barely over a year sober, and the third one was just this last, just a couple weeks ago. So, but I'm sober. I'm here and I'm sober through it. And I have my higher power and I have my sponsor and I have my friends in AA to thank for that. And good people around me. So that's really all I got. Thank you.
Thank you, Kristen. Thank you for your service. Tori will come up and read the traditions.
I'm Tori and I'm an alcoholic. I just want to say thank you to Chris, welcome home, and happy Veterans Day to all the veterans in the room. The 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Jordan will come up and do the chips now.
Hello everyone, my name is Jordan and I'm an alcoholic. Here at Fourth Dimension we have a chip system to celebrate different lengths of sobriety. For our first chip we have a silver chip for anyone who wants to give up the fight and give this way of life a try. Anyone? Alright. Is there anyone celebrating 1 month? What about 2 months? That was Joe, Adrian, and Tammy with 2 months. Is there anyone celebrating 3 months? What about 6 months? That was Kevin with 6 months. Is there anyone celebrating 9 months? What about 1 year? That was Scott with 1 year. And is there anyone celebrating multiples? And that was Rita with 34 years. If you haven't had a drink today, thank your higher power. For our second speaker, Bill W.
I'm alive. Hi, everybody. My name's Bill. I'm an alcoholic. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
I wish you couldn't soon, but my name's Bill. I'm an alcoholic, and thank you, Sean, for asking me. There he is. I said I'm an alcoholic this three times now, right? I used to have a real hard time saying the A word. I don't know about you guys, but I didn't like saying it. I was chemically dependent. That's what was fashionable at the time. It was 1984. There was a treatment center on every corner. And there was Cocaine Anonymous everywhere. That's how long ago it was. But I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to talk about drinking if that offends you. You know, go outside, I guess, and play on your phone. But they talked about drinking when I came to AA. You know, they talked about drinking, and I'm glad they did, because I wasn't interested in, you know, I was like, wow, that guy, I guess he was all right at one time in his life. I'm sorry he had to go to AA. But I started drinking at 14. I was in AA by 17, I think, which was really, I was not happy about that. I didn't think it was very fair. I've been sober since 19. I mean, the best years of my life have been taken by AA. But today I know that I'm a very fortunate person. You know, I got to miss out on a lot of time in prison. You know, I sure didn't think I'd be standing here, you know, on Friday night, Newport Richey, Florida. I figured I'd be in the day room of some mental institution or, you know, getting out of the Ohio State Penitentiary for the second time. I started drinking at 14. First thing I drank was Carlo Rossi wine. It was six something a gallon. It's 12 now, I think, 11 something at Walmart. I check whenever I'm there. And all I remember is, you know, it tasted horrible. You know what I mean? This kid said, "Do you drink?" I said, "Yeah." You know, I would always lie. You know, I mean, I live in a landlocked, you know, place. Have you been surfing? Oh, yeah, I've been surfing. Yeah. I mean, I would lie about everything. You know, it got me in a lot of trouble with drugs. We'll try to avoid that. But I would just say I did stuff because, you know, you're not going to like me if I don't know or whatever. And it's real helpful when you're trying to get sober, when you know everything. I know there's nobody out there like that tonight, but I started drinking. The first time I drank, I just remember I had a sense of ease and comfort. You know what I mean? I just felt amazing. I remember thinking, I'm going to do this every chance I get. And that's what I did. And the second or third time I drank, I had my first blackout. And I didn't know what those were until I got to AA. I thought it was time travel. I just knew that I'm with these people, and now I'm with these other people. And usually, you know, the people at the beginning of the time travel are friendly and nice, and the people at the end of the time travel are not. You know, it's usually someone getting their morning paper wondering what some 15-year-old kid's doing sleeping in their driveway, you know, face down. They'd be like, "You all right?" I'd be like, I'm leaving, you know. Or I'd get into altercations with thorn bushes and stuff. One time I got stuck in a thorn bush after drinking some jungle juice. I don't know if anybody's ever drank that. 190 in fruit, not good for an alcoholic. It tastes like Hawaiian punch, but, you know, it's like probably 40% alcohol. I look like someone whipped me with a thorn bush, you know, I just all cut up. You know, I just remember I just keep getting up trying to get out. I just pass out and get back up. That went on for, you know, several hours. I think anybody normal would just stop drinking, not me. You know, I went back with a vengeance. I went into heavy training, kind of like boot camp, you know. I mean, I just, or CrossFit or something. But I mean, every time I think you just need to drink more and get over the hump, you know. I never got over the hump. And what would happen is most people that I drink with once, unless they're really deranged, and I drink with them a couple times. But I was just what the book talks about. You know, I was dangerously antisocial. I mean, you just don't know what I'm going to do. If I'm in the passenger seat, I'm good for grabbing the wheel a lot of times, trying to run us into traffic, things like that. You know, and I think it's hilarious, but nobody else does. So, you know, I'm by myself a lot. And I get thrown out of the car a lot. And I get thrown out of the car like, what? You know what I mean? You're just like, no. And but my first blackout was with my mother. I treated her to that. But I was 14, and I wake up. My friend was there. He's gone, you know, and I'm like, I wonder where he's at. You know, it was 9 o'clock at night last I remember. It's 9 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, so I go up to get my Cheerios or whatever. My mom just looks really bad. you know, really distressed. And she's like, what were you on last night? I'm like, what's she talking about, you know? And anyway, she gave me the highlights, which was pretty much every time I drank for the rest of my drinking career, next 5 years. They woke me up. I was frothing at the mouth. I ran into a couple walls. I called her some profanities, and then I tried to urinate, like, right here in the living room, you know, behind a stereo speaker in front of the whole family. And I'm just like, she's making this up. She's just trying to scare me out of drinking. I remember my little brother laughing, like, yeah, you did, you know, and they're always winning. I'm so grateful, though, that I got sober before the freaking phones and Facebook. I feel sorry for you kids today. I mean, I'm sure I would be all over YouTube fails or something, but, you know, I was always puking all over myself, wetting my pants, stuff like that, you know. I mean, my major problems would be, like, I'd be at a party with this many people, and I'd wake up, I notice my pants are peed down to my knees. Everybody else is passed out, and all I'm thinking, did they pass out before or after I peed my pants? That's all I'm worried about. I'm not so concerned I peed my pants. I just want to know people know I peed my pants. I hitchhiked a lot. I'm one of the last of the hitchhikers. You know, and hitchhiking's interesting. Some of you know. I would be praying that I'd get a ride, then I'd be praying I got out of that car alive, you know, usually. But, you know, but it never stopped me. You know, I would walk from here to Lakeland on the rumor that there was a party somewhere. I was that guy that you'd find me in front of a gas station or something. I was like, here, there's a party around here. And, you know, there's no party. I don't know anybody at the party. But I always bring that up, though, to show my willingness to drink. You know, I would go to any lengths, you know what I mean? Then I get sober. There's a meeting across the street. I don't have a ride. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? I got people in AA giving me their numbers saying, look, we'll come get you. Just call us. And I'm like, I'm not calling them. They don't mean that. You know, they don't want to pick me up. And anyway, so lots of walking. And it's, like I said, it's Ohio, so it's cold. People throw bottles at you. They throw fireworks at you. It sucked. So I'm drunk all the time. Nobody wants to be with me. I'm trying to figure out why. And I decide, because I'm a genius, I decide that, you know, I need my driver's license. That's my problem. We live out here in the sticks. If I had a car, I have my license, I get a girlfriend, I get a job, I'd be a normal, productive member of society. I guess I thought the girlfriend and the job were going to be in the trunk of the car. But I got a car, and what I'm sure happened to a lot of you, I got a DUI just about instantly. There were DWIs back then. But anyway, I get a DWI, I get my DWI, I always tell the story. I'm pulling out of an Arby's. So, you know, the next 2 years I'm hitchhiking, what do you think I'm saying? If you wouldn't have stopped for that beef and cheddar, you'd be in a car with heat right now. You know, I didn't know you don't get DWIs for eating sandwiches. You got to be drunk. But that's what I thought. And I mean, I would just bawl myself out every time you'd see me, like, walk. And I'd think, man, if you wouldn't have stopped at Arby's, you'd be in a car right now. You'd probably have a job. You'd have a girlfriend. You know, but instead, just hitchhiking, smoking cigarettes, angry. But you know, lost my license for like a year, had to go to an alcoholism class. First time I saw the, you know, the posters, they don't have any here, of course, but, you know, the posters with the chart, the disease, I remember just thinking it was ridiculous, you know. And I guess I was 17, and I remember telling people at school, like, I'm bragging, like, I'm like hardcore, you know. I'm like, yeah, I gotta go to my alcohol classes. And I remember this girl, I would always get mad that when people who drank would talk to me about my drinking, that would really piss me off, you know what I mean? They'd be like, well, you know, you really shouldn't drink. You know, you have a problem. I would get so mad. And I remember this girl being like, well, I hope you listen at those classes because we think you have a problem. You know, and I would just get so irritated. But, you know, I was the last to know. So, I went to the things. I got my license back. Well, actually, I shouldn't have got my license back. We had a family meeting. That was always fun. We had a family meeting. I live with my mother. My poor mother, you know, my dad travels, so my mother knows that I'm insane. You know, she finds me in the yard and stuff, and, you know, she got hip to, I would always sneak out, you know, that age, so she started locking the deadbolt, so I got a knock to get in, you know what I mean? And, you know, I don't know about you, but when I'm drunk, the last thing I want to do is listen to my mother. So, you know, I'd be, like, wrapped up in my army coat, you know, it's below zero out, and I'm smoking cigarettes, just like, well, I'd rather be out here drunk than listening to her, you know? I'm lucky I didn't freeze to death. Eventually, I'd beat on the door, you know, then she'd go off on me about being drunk, and so, you know, She knew I shouldn't drink, is my point. I was also a late night chef. I know we got some of them here. You know. Start like cooking some chili drunk at like 2:30 in the morning. You wake up to the smoke alarm blaring, your mother's screaming at you, you know. And you're just like, I'm not drunk, you know, I'm always not drunk. But just, you know, lovely things like that. It's no secret why I've never wanted to have kids. Anyway, I mean, I just made her life hell, but we had this meeting, and you know, and my dad's trying to help me get my license. My mom's like, he's going to kill someone. He has no business driving. He doesn't work. I mean, all this is true. He doesn't work. He's high all the time. He's drunk all the time. You know, I find him in the yard. He can't get in the house. I make all kinds of racket, you know, just trying to get in the house, falling downstairs, stuff like that. So, you know, whatever reason, he helped me get my license. And I mean, I was like in tears, you know, because I'm like, I love you, Dad, you know. And, he's like, look, because you're 18 now. That's the other thing. I just turned 18 and I was not excited about it at all. You know, I remember my friends were like, what are you going to do now? You're 18. I remember I was drinking a beer. I said, well, I imagine I'll be going to jail soon. You know? I kind of knew, you know, I wasn't excited about it, but I kind of knew where my life was headed. So my dad was like, look, they're just getting serious. You know, it was like, it was when they first started the mandatory jail time for DUIs, like 10 days, I think. And so 1984. And I was like, oh, no, he was like, look, just call me. He goes, I won't yell at you. I won't bitch at you. I just don't want to see you get a DUI. I'm like tearing up just thinking about it. You know what I mean? And I was like, I can't get a DUI. I was so happy. I remember just walking around. I always think of Bill's stories like the goose hung high. You know, self-knowledge was the answer or whatever. And I just thought, I don't have this problem anymore. You know what I mean? If I get drunk, I just call my dad. Home free. I'm bragging all my friends about it. And so I go out that night, get a DUI. Got a guy with me. You know, the guy with me is not drunk. He's begging me to let him drive. And, you know, I don't know about you, but the proper answer when someone asks you for your keys when you're drunk is like, it's my car, I'll drive. You know, and I flipped the car. The poor guy, he wasn't drunk. He was like clawing me and stuff. He was kind of upset. You know, when I'm drunk, I don't really understand physics, you know. So we were going like 55 on, you know, S curves where it's like 15 miles an hour down a hill. And he's like, slow down. And I'm like, why? You know, and we flipped. And I just remember, you know, it's weird how you sober up when your car stops moving. You know what I mean? All I'm thinking is state police, DUI, you know. And so anyway, the long and the short of it was I got a DUI. And so it's like 6 hours from the time my father is like, just please, I just don't want to see you get another DUI. You know, he's picking me up. I'm trying to get my mom to pick me up. You know, dad shows up, of course. And I remember looking at him and I remember thinking, I'd rather stay in jail and ride home with him. It's more friendly in here, you know, in the county jail than riding home with dad. And the other funny thing that I don't remember is the first thing I tried to do is I tried to get my mom to get a tow truck, and I thought we'd move the car and nobody'd know. I didn't know that the tow truck would call the police. So my first DUI, a guy was like, you got a penny? Put a penny under your tongue, you know? And I didn't have one, but apparently, I don't remember any of this. My mom says she came to the site of the accident. She said I had a bunch of change in my mouth. You could hear it like rattling around. I said, don't worry, Mom. I got it beat. And my mom knew I was special then. But I don't even remember that. I mean, she could give you a better, you know, a clearer story of what really happened. But I just knew that my friend was in a treatment center. He was in a 28-day, they were called care units. It was a 28-day hospital, like a medical detox and rehab. And I was making fun of him because he was in there, you know what I mean? I always like to have somebody who's in a little worse shape than me so I can be like, I don't have a problem. He's in a freaking treatment center. You know? But that day, you know, he called me and I was like, what's the number of that place? I was like, they just got me on another DWI. I said, and I'm 18, you know, I got to do something. And I just seen one flew to the cuckoo's nest. So I thought, you know, I'll be like Jack Nicholson. I'll go in there. I'll pretend I'm an alcoholic. And it was funny because I was kind of excited about it. I thought, and I won't do any drugs and I won't drink for 30 days. And when I get out, it's going to be like Christmas, you know. I thought it's just going to be amazing, you know what I mean? Because I was like, I'm kind of burnt out, you know, I need a breather. So I went in there and it was scary. They said the A word a lot. And they wanted me to go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, which I thought was really ridiculous. It was like a bad after-school special, you know. I'm like, ATM, I'm like, alcohol, really? And so we went down to the basement of this hospital. And we went to the AA meeting, and the guy speaking, his name was Bill. He had his medallion, you know, big gold medallion on a big gold chain, like a rapper. Rappers weren't even really out yet, but and he had 30 years of sobriety, which made me really nervous. I mean, 30 years of sobriety sounded like 30 years in Alcatraz, you know what I mean? 30 years in a dungeon, you know, being whipped every... I don't know why I thought that, but I mean, it just sounded bad. But he did say a couple things that stood out to me. He said the only hopeless case was 24 empty bottles, and that made sense. And then he said that, not made sense. He said that in the 50s, they had Vicks inhalers and they had Benzedrine in them. And you could bust them open and eat the Benzedrine. I got really excited about that because I could see a Walgreens from my room. And, because I've been sober now for about 4 hours, and I really didn't like it very much, you know. Thank God you could still smoke in the places. And they had the cigarette, like the old car cigarette lighters, they had them on the wall, and you had to light your cigarette on the wall. That was kind of weird. But first night there, somebody slit their wrist, and I was like, man, what did they do to you in here to make you want to kill yourself, you know? And, I mean, I had no idea. I thought it was going to be like one of them old police shows like Dragnet. I thought they were going to put me in a chair and put a big light in my face and be like, you're an alcoholic, you know? And that never happened. But what was weird is they had these a thing called meet and greet, and they had young people come in, and it was different people that had disappeared from my high school. And they were in AA now, you know what I mean? You know how you're like partying with people at school and they just vanish? You don't know what happened to them. They get arrested and they just disappear off the face of the earth. They would like show up and I'd be like, you're like in AA? Like, I was like, you don't drink at all? You know, you smoke? It was just weird. But I mean, it was kind of cool to see they were alive. And I don't know. I the first chance I got to smuggle drugs in there, I did. And, you know, there's big signs all over the thing. It's like, it's a federal offense to bring substances into this treatment center. And I was like, oh, well, you know. And that's what I did. You know, I went to groups. I thought, you know, I found that therapy and group was a lot more tolerable when I was high. And but I didn't have a problem, you know. But, you know, the good thing was is they brought lots of AA meetings and lots of speakers. And then when you got to a certain level, they put you on a van. You know, you came in the big, long van. And you had an orange armband, so everybody in AA knew you were fresh meat. They threw you in the pit, and you know, them AA people, they're all making eye contact, you know, which I hate it. They're like, hi, welcome, you're new. You know, do you have a sponsor? You know, and I'm like, back. You know what I mean? I was having no part of this AA, you know. I'd seen the Stepford Wives. So, you know, it just freaked me out, man. And I was like, you know, being sober, you know, I was like, I'm glad that you older people, you know, got help. And I'm like, maybe when I'm 60 or 70, I'll check out AA if it ever gets bad, you know. And I left out, you know, everybody hates me. Nobody wants to be around me except for people in AA. You know what I mean? I left out anybody who's a friend of mine is usually going to be the victim of violent crime if you hang out with me. One of my friends almost beheaded him with a garden hoe over the split on a half gallon of whiskey, you know. And you know, other times I chased some other people around my house with a chainsaw. I just seen Friday the 13th. I was kind of impressed where they were drinking, and I thought, oh, this will freak them out. I'd always get these ideas, man. I was the only one that thought they were funny, though. You know what I mean? Nobody else thought they were funny. And I mean, my dad, I remember the next day, my dad's like, smells like somebody's running a chainsaw in the house. I don't know. I was always like, something's broken, something's missing. It's always me, you know, and I'm just denying it. But I started thinking maybe I'm an alcoholic, you know, and thank God for the treatment center. I badmouthed it for a while, but I mean, thank God, you know, they said about it being a disease. And I remember the first time they mentioned it being a disease, and I was just like, well, that would be nice, but I know that I'm just a rotten SOB. You know what I mean? I'm just a weak-willed. I love the part in the book. I think it's in Two Employers, but it says something like, drinking should only be a problem for the spineless and the stupid. And that's what I thought. I can't handle my liquor. You know, it's embarrassing kind of thing. And still thinking I'm going to drink again, you know, somehow. So I get out of there, and, you know, all these people are trying to help me. But I'm like, well, I'm not an alcoholic, but I need to stop drinking. You know what I mean? Because drinking is when I attack people and stuff. And you know what I mean? I only get arrested when I'm drunk. You know what I mean? When I'm drunk is when I get arrested. When I hurt people, I'm drunk. So I was like, I'm a drug addict, but I'm going to do drugs. This doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But anyway, so I started smoking pot. And the only reason I mention this is when I smoke pot, I get really thirsty. And I don't drink Diet Pepsi. You know what I mean? I start drinking alcohol. Because alcohol is what works. Pot, you know, the whiskey and milk story, I thought that was so stupid. For me, it was pot. I would smoke pot. And then also the good thing is you're not sober now, so it's not such a big deal drinking. So anyway, I start drinking. Can't stop drinking. You know, and then I'm like, well, I don't have my license. I lost my license for like 2 years. So I was like, I'm cool. You know what I mean? How am I going to get in trouble? I'm not driving. I don't rob people. 3 months later, I got a robbery charge. I robbed some guy I met in the rehab, you know. And you know, of course, that's not my fault, you know, because he shouldn't have pressed charges. He should have just robbed me back, you know. So now my life's ruined. I'm never going to be able to get a good job. I got a felony charge. And I'm going to, you know, I'm looking at going to Old Mansfield. And I just made a big joke of it at first till the older guys got my attention. They're like, dude, I don't know what you're laughing about. They're like, Old Mansfield's no joke, you know. And if you ever seen Shawshank, that's where they filmed it. But it was like one of these Civil War deals. You know, they built it during the Civil War and they sent all the young guys up there and it was not a good deal. Guys that were like tough guys were telling me and I was like, man, I need to move to Colorado and build a teepee and eat squirrels for about 20 years, you know what I mean? That was my plan B. But, you know, first I was just laughing about it, like everybody's going to college or joining the military. I'm like, well, I'm going to go learn to make license plates upstate, you know? And so I went back to treatment, you know, even though my attorney told my dad it was a waste of money. Went up there, and the only difference was I did everything he said. I still don't think I thought I was an alcoholic, you know what I mean? I was just like, I need to play this game. And I was like, and the other crazy one, here's my whole God concept at the time. It's like, God knows that the only thing I care about is drinking. That is how evil he is. It's like, drink or prison. And then it started looking like both, you know what I mean? Which really made me mad because I was staying sober and I'm telling my attorney, like, I'm going to get out of this. He goes, oh, no, you're going to prison. He said, but don't worry, you're just going to do like 18 months. And I was like, dude. I know my parents raised me with what comes around goes around. I was not interested in going to prison. Because of what I've been doing, I was like, I would like be praying for help, you know, like, God, help me. And then at the same time, I think, you know, you deserve to go through and get this shit kicked out of you. You know, for what you've done to your family, you know, and your parents and stuff. And I was not happy. But anyway, what ended up happening was, I went to this treatment center. I'm reading the big book. I was even reading the big book. That's how desperate I was. You know, and then I got a sponsor, even crazier. Got a sponsor. This guy was called Killer Joe. I thought he was in the mafia, but he wasn't. But why is this guy to be my sponsor? You're probably wondering. Was it the big book? Was it his relationship with God? No, it was he talked about being on LSD, driving in rush hour traffic. When he didn't have a job, so he'd feel like part of society, he would drive with the traffic. I said, that's my man. That has been my sponsor since 1984. That's why I asked him. And if I would have known he was into the big book, I would have never asked him. After I got him, all he talked about was the big book. It annoyed the hell out of him. He'd like, have you read the doctor's opinion? He'd act like it was a Stephen King novel. You know, he'd be like, have you read the doctor's opinion? Have you read about the phenomenon of craving? You know, and I'd be like, oh, man. And then he's like asking me if I prayed. And then he want me to do real crazy things. Like, he's like, how often do you go to meetings? I'd be like, once a week. And he'd be like, well, how often did you drink? And I'm like, every day? He goes, well, I think you can go to one meeting a day. Because, you know, I was real busy in my mom's basement, not working, you know, watching television. You know, I was real busy, not going to school, you know, just pretty much walking around smoking cigarettes and crying about being an alcoholic, trying to figure out how many years I was going to live. You know what I mean? I was like, you're 18 and you're in AA. Just hang yourself. Have some courage. But I don't know, I couldn't sleep. That's the other blessing I had. I was blessed with insomnia. And I would get so mad, I'd go to meetings and tell them, like, I need some pills, man. I cannot sleep. I need some, like, Valium or something. And they'd be like, nobody ever died from lack of sleep. And I'd get so mad. And but the blessing was my sponsor was he's a stationary engineer, a boiler operator at Ford Motor, and he worked third shift. So he'd be like, hey, I'm in the boiler room all by myself. You can call anytime. Well, I'm not really willing to talk about AA at the meeting. I'm not really willing to talk to him at 10 o'clock at night, around 2:30 after about two packs of Marlboros and pacing around my house and thinking I've been sober for 30 days. I call this guy from AA because the other blessing is, you know, they didn't have cable and all that stuff then. The TV went, shh. You get the Star Spangled Banner and it's just your brain sizzling like eggs and bacon, you know. Just chain smoking. And I'd call him and he'd be like, yeah, Bill, what do you want? And this is before caller ID. I'd be like, how do you know it's me? He'd go, other people got jobs. They sleep at night. He'd laugh and I'd be madder than hell. But, you know, just to talk to somebody was a relief. So I'd talk to him and all he would talk about, you reading the big book? Have you read Bill's story? I'd be like, God, you know, I can't get away from it. So finally, he convinced me that it was all about action. He said, I don't care if you believe it. I don't care if you understand it. He goes, if you read it and do what it says, you'll stay sober in spite of yourself. That's what they kept saying, like it was some kind of magic, you know. And I don't know why. I think I just got mad. I was like, I'm going to do everything this idiot says to do and prove to him that it won't work. And then when it doesn't, I can just drink with a clear conscience. You know what I mean? I'm just going to max it out. I'm going to go maybe rob a post office or something. Get it over with. I started wanting to get locked up. You know what I mean? I was like, if I could just get locked up, all this stress would be off of me. I'd be locked up, so I wouldn't have to worry about getting locked up. And it made a lot of sense. 2 a.m, stark raving sober, you know. So I started doing what he said. I started reading the book. Started going to a meeting every night. Then he started asking me to do really weird stuff. He's like, he goes, you want to come down with me to the state mental hospital to do an AA meeting? I'm like, why would we go down there? He's like, because there's alcoholics in there. So we go to Longview. If you've ever seen, it's in Cincinnati. But it was one of these big industrial size, like, mental, you know, warehouses where you're talking to the people. They've been in there 20 or 30 years. Their just hands are just completely nicotine stained. They're in bathrobes. They've been, you know, no teeth. They've been in there forever. And it freaked me out. They're all on Thorazine. When they grab your hand to pray, they're like doing all kinds of weird involuntary muscle stuff, you know. And you learn not to bring all your cigarettes because in Thorazine, you can smoke a whole cigarette in one drag. You know, I give this guy a cigarette. He's just like, it's like, can I get another one? You know, he looked just like Uncle Fester. And I was like, man. And he was like, that's alcoholism. You keep drinking, you'll end up in here, you know. And I don't know. I mean, the only reason I can say I did this stuff is I like my sponsor and I think I wanted him to like me. You know what I mean? And when I talked to him, I'd feel a little bit better. I'd feel a little less crazy, you know. And then he got me with an even bigger one. Like, as a kid, if I had to do a book report or something, I would just fail. You know what I mean? I couldn't stand in front of people and talk. I mean, I would just have a panic attack and just sweat, you know, and freak out. Now, if I was on a bunch of Demerol, I'd volunteer to go first. But, you know, and just drool all over the place and be like, what's my line, you know? But he asked me to go to the county jail and talk. And he's like, and I was like, well, I've only been sober like a month. I don't know what I'm going to say. He said, just tell him what it's like to be sober a month. You know what I mean? He's like, it'll keep you sober. And the other crazy thing, he would never really try to get me to do stuff. He would act like, hey, if you're not going to do it, I'll get somebody who wants to stay sober to do it. Like, he's just going to drop you like a hot potato. So I'll be like, okay, I'll do it. And then I'm like, damn, I can't believe I told him I'd do it, you know? And I did it and had a panic attack, probably lied the whole time. And when it was done, he said, good job. They kept you sober. And I was like, I'm not used to anybody saying anything but never come back here again or we'll kill you, you know, kind of stuff. So I did that. And then the big one that I think really changed my life was he got me going to this prison meeting. You know, and I'm like, wait a minute. I'm coming to AA to stay as far away from prison as possible. That's the only reason I'm coming here, to stay out of prison. He's like, well, we meet at my house at 3:00. We're going to drive 2 hours up to London, Ohio. We'll have dinner. Then we'll go into the maximum security penitentiary. We'll have an AA meeting. Then we'll come back. We'll get home around 10. I'm like, you want to do like 7 hours at AA in one day? You know, now I'm a guy that's waited in people's apartment complex parking lots for 24 hours that have threatened to kill me the last time I seen them to try to give me something when I don't have any money. I was willing to do that, you know, but I don't know. I said yes, and we went up there and it changed my life. You know what I mean? I met a bunch of guys just like me, but, you know, and you know, doing 5, 10, 15, 20 years for things that I had done or almost did. And I realized the only difference between me and them was Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what I mean? And I remember I was standing back because the guys were scary. They had weights in there back then. These guys made Arnold look little. You know, they'd come in, they'd shake your hand. First thing they let you know is they can break every bone in your hand easily. And I was in the back, and my sponsor was like, hey, you ever get high with your hands in your pockets? And I said, no. He said, well, get up here and shake these guys' hands if you want to get sober. So when they'd come in, we'd be shaking their hands. And my sponsor's off the chain. He's real loud. He's got this crazy laugh. And, you know, some big guy would come in. He'd go, man, don't he look like Magic Johnson? I think you're going to get us killed. And he'd chill out. You know what I mean? Or he'd be like, how you doing tonight? I'd be like, how do you think they're doing? They're in prison, you idiot. You know? They loved him. They called him Rambo Joe. And anyway, I'm shaking these guys' hands. I remember one night this guy came in. He goes, man, every time I come to this meeting, he goes, you greet me with a smile. And he goes, it just makes me want to come back. And I mean, I felt, you know, it was weird, but I felt good. And I wasn't used to feeling good, you know. But he got me doing all these things, you know, against my better judgment. And what ended up happening was we did that for a few years. And I've pretty much been involved in that my whole sobriety. My sobriety date's May 25th of 1985, and all that tells you is that AA works. You know what I mean? I thought it was never going to work for me. You know, I loved seeing the people that picked up chips tonight. Congratulations. I remember when I got my first 30 days. You know, I had a couple times that happened. The first time I got 30 days, I just remember like questioning myself. Everybody's like patting me on the back, and I'm like, do I really have 30 days? Like in a row? You know what I mean? And then the second time, I remember people like, good job. And I think, man, don't be counting on this. This has happened before. I don't think it's going to last. My sobriety is usually fleeting. You know, because I mean, I would be on my way to a meeting, and I'd do stuff like heads. You know, I'd flip a coin, like heads, we go to the meeting. Tails, we get a 40. And it'd be heads, go to the meeting. 2 out of 3. You know what I mean? I'd do whatever to where you end up drinking, you know? Or I'd be like, call your sponsor. They say, call your sponsor. You know what I mean? And then I think, if I call him, he's going to talk me out of drinking. Why would I want to call him? You know? So, I mean, I still talk to my sponsor. I had the same sponsor all this time, 31 years. I regularly speak to him. Okay. I got to wrap it up. Basically, you know, like I said, he got me into action. He got me into the steps. We went through the steps. He got me the prisons. I still do prison and detox down here. I do 49th Street Jail, which you can, if anybody's missing your meeting, go down to 49th Street Jail. You can probably find them. Or PAR Detox. You can probably find them there. But I regularly go there because that's our natural habitat. It's not sitting here being sober, you know. It's in the jail or detox or, you know, causing someone grief. But you know, I have a great life. I've had a job pretty much since I've been sober. Before AA, I mean, I just went to temp agencies, and tax time was a nightmare. I'd have like 50 W-2s every year. It usually lasts an average of 4 to 6 hours on a job before I'd get my feelings hurt and have to quit. And you know, I've had the same job now for like 17 years. I own a home. I mean, my fears on my first inventory, and that was the thing, I was never going to do that inventory, were like, I'm going to live in my mom's basement till she dies, then I'll be a ward of the state. I mean, I just knew that. At 19, I just thought, that's just the way it is. You're a loser. You'll always be a loser, and it's just the way it is. But, you know, it's been just the opposite. I mean, I have a great life. I'm happy most of the time, and I'm very active in AA, and I tell you, that's the thing I'm the most grateful for, because a lot of the people that helped me get sober are not sober today, you know, and most of them, it was because their lives got good, and they didn't need, I mean, the most common thing in AA is once the heat's off, we don't want to do this anymore. Like, well, I feel good now, and it's just like, you know, somebody who has heart disease or something like that, you're on a regime, you do good, but you go off the diet, or you go off the insulin, or whatever, you're going to have problems. But I'm out of time. I appreciate y'all listening. Thanks for having me.